to the splendor, the spectacle, the sparkling sensation, where the romance, the comedy, and the thrill of Disney fantasies come to electric life.
And as our friend Jiminy said, welcome. Welcome to the Disney Nerds Podcast, a place each week where like-minded people get together to discuss all things Disney. We'll help you get your Disney fix on. Here we go.
A Magic Kingdom proudly presents, in a million points of musical light, the magical worlds of Disney.
Hello and welcome to show number 79 of the Disney Nerds Podcast. On this week's show, we're going to continue on with our Movie Madness tournament with the Elite Eight. Hang on after that, because we have a great interview with Len Testa and Jim Hill coming up right after that, that Jimmy and Sam sat in with them the other night. A really, really cool interview. You're going to hear a lot of good information from this one. So before we start, let's introduce who's here tonight. And we're going to start out with Jen. Jen, welcome back.
Hey, thanks. I picked a hard time to come back, I think.
Oh, I know. These are some good games.
Yeah.
We also have Sam with us. Sam, how's it going?
Outstanding. Ready to take this Elite Eight down to a Final Four, baby.
I know. I can't wait to see who we get. And we also have Jimmy with us. Jimmy, how you doing?
I'm fantastic. Very happy to be here.
Very cool. Okay, so as we're saying, we're down to the Elite Eight. We have four more games to get us down to our Final Four of the Movie Madness Tournament. These are going to be our favorite animated full-length movies that we've gone from 64 down to the eight that we have right now. So let's get on to the tournament. We're going to start out in the Magic Kingdom region, and our game in there is the number one Beauty and the Beast versus the number three Frozen. And we're going to start out with Jen. Ladies go first.
Of course you will. I hate you. Sam, you said your family was upset about Frozen and Cinderella. I think Frozen and Beauty and the Beast, that jumped out at me from round one.
It,
as
it did then too. Right
an
after
impossible
the...
decision, yes. Because Beauty and the Beast has always been the easy decision to blow through every wonderful movie of all time. There's so much good about it. But then Frozen came along, and it has the same qualities. There's great characters, there's great lines, there's great scenes and music, and I don't know, and I don't want to pick. But I have to, right? I went with Frozen, and I cannot believe it. I went with Frozen.
Okay.
Did I hear your echo there for a second, Jen?
I was going to say, if she didn't want to pick, I can pick for you.
Yeah.
I can pick this week again.
Oh, yeah. That was a lot of fun. I really think you should just do the show as me from now on.
No.
April. Or Jimmy can do it as all April, four of us.
Like April Fool's next year?
Yeah, there you go. One person on and doing all of the voices.
That would be pretty funny.
I'm out. But Frozen. I picked Frozen, and I think I could pick both of them every day for the rest of my life and watch them both back to back.
I agree. One vote for Frozen. Okay, Sam, you're up.
I'm up. Oh, and again, this is a tough one. I was ridiculed by my family for putting both Frozen and Beauty and the Beast in the same bracket because only one of them can make the Final Four, and they swore this is the final matchup that is what it should be.
Yes.
But there's one thing I want to add, and I think we talked about it off the air last year. And one of the things I did since we started this tournament is I went back and watched Waking Sleeping Beauty, which is, if you're not aware, it's a film that you can get on Netflix. You can get the DVD, or I think you can stream it, which is a behind-the-scenes look at the Disney studios from about 1984 to 1994. And it really talks about the studios and the animation studios hitting rock bottom on a weekend when their movie, The Black Cauldron, lost at the box office to the Care Bears movie, all the way through the release of The Lion King. And everything that was happening behind the scenes while these movies were coming along. And when you look at our Elite Eight here, most of those movies are still in here. We're talking Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, Lion King. Just unbelievable. And I absolutely would say, if you guys haven't seen it or if you're listening, Waking Sleeping Beauty, you want to watch that. And understanding what was going on behind the scenes and just understanding some of the groundbreaking scenes that were in Beauty and the Beast, I have to go that way. As much as I like Frozen, and I know we give it a bum rap, I'm going to go Beauty and the Beast with my pick. And that was a long way for me to say Beauty and the Beast.
That's a great argument, though. No, I think it makes sense, though, because we've talked about this in multiple games. You can look at these so many different ways. What would I pick up off the shelf? What mattered the most to the Disney company? I mean, that's a really solid argument, so I like it.
Okay, very cool. Jimmy, what's your pick?
Beauty and the Beast.
Okay, we have 2-1, Beauty and the Beast. And I'm going to go next, and I'm going to also take Beauty and the Beast. And Sam, you're going to read for our fans, our friends out there this week. What do they say?
I am reading for our friends at 87% Beauty and the Beast.
Wow.
Which was pretty lopsided based on the fact that Frozen and both of these movies have been just rolling through everything.
Yeah. Well, and wasn't Frozen and Cinderella kind of close for a long time?
They were tied up by our fans for a long time.
Yeah, and I do think, again, I would love to see this in 10 years. Like, after, you know,
yes,
Beauty and the Beast has stood the test of time, and Frozen, I think, will as well, but it won't be so fresh where there's not so many strong opinions one way or the other. I mean, it's so, so new that it's hard to call it the greatest movie of all time, so.
It's true. It's very true.
I mean, I didn't have any problem calling it that, but no, you know what I mean? It's very difficult. I do think it'd be really cool to see this again in, you know, 5 or 10 years.
So yeah. How about, let me ask you this, Jen, how about your daughters? Are they Frozen or Beauty and the Beast fans?
We've watched Frozen 6 times in the last week or two, so they love,
and that's an
they
age
love
thing,
Belle.
So.
They love Belle. They love Beauty and the Beast, but honestly, it's the music of Frozen that really does it for all of us, I think. So, and not just Let It Go. Like, this score from start to finish is the most brilliant Disney score I've ever heard. So,
well, you know, I think some they're also similar in some ways. You know, you had Beauty and the Beast as well as Frozen, because Frozen, one of the things they touted was the great stage actors.
Yeah.
And Beauty and the Beast was the same way. I mean, you have Jerry Orbach as Lumiere, which most people know him either from Dirty Dancing or from Law and Order. But he was a wonderful stage actor. So I think they're kind of similar in some ways.
And Paige O'Hara had a bunch of, she and I think whoever, I'm trying to remember an interview I heard, I believe maybe her husband or somebody, they had a lot of Broadway experience as well. So
yeah,
it's a good point. Both amazing movies that I do really think will be well respected for a very long time.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, but only one moves on, and that one is Beauty and the Beast. So let's drop down now to the Hollywood Studios region, and we have another number one matchup with the number one Aladdin versus the number three Snow White. Now, Snow White, the only lady from the past in the tournament still. And we're going to start with Sam this round.
Starting with me, from my point of view, this actually wasn't a difficult matchup. This, to me, was Aladdin all the way. I love the comedic flair that the late Robin Williams added. It's Aladdin for me.
Okay, very good. Jimmy, what do you think?
I am going to go with the original Snow White.
Okay, there you go, 1-1. And moving on to myself, I am going to choose Aladdin. I love Snow White. It is a classic. However, I would rather watch Aladdin a lot more. Jen, you're up.
Yeah, well, I had this matchup as 2 completely different movies originally. So looking at Aladdin versus Snow White, I thought Aladdin was a simple choice as well. Snow White, I've said before, is probably the most important animated movie, but it's just, as a movie, I think Aladdin is much better.
Okay, very cool. And how about our friends, Sam? What do they say?
Our friends are 68% Aladdin.
Okay. Aladdin moves on.
The one versus the one.
We had like a role reversal there. I was yes. I was Ed in that scenario. I was the lone dissenter.
That's because Frozen wasn't moving on.
Well, that's true. Good point.
Yeah, I was Ed last time then.
That's right.
I was the lone dissenter.
Who will be Ed next?
It'll be Ed.
Okay, well, let's move on into the Epcot region and find out. we have the number one seeded team, the Little Mermaid, versus the number two seeded team, Toy Story. What's it going to be? Jimmy, you're going to start this one out.
I will go with the hand-drawn animation and Ariel and Little Mermaid.
Okay, one for Mermaid. I am going to take Toy Story. I still think Toy Story is one hell of a movie. I think that it was what brought Pixar up, and it is going to just keep on continuing. Toy Story for me. Sam, what did the fans say? What did our friends say?
The fans, in maybe one of the closest we have had, 51% Toy Story.
Wow.
Okay.
That is close.
Very much. Jen, how about you?
This was another hard one for me. I would say 3 out of 4 were difficult for me, but Ariel is one of my favorite movies, but, and this is kind of me going, I'm a little bit of a flip-flopper in my reasoning, but I think Toy Story is an all-around incredible movie and definitely an important part of Disney and Pixar history. I went with Toy Story.
I will echo you guys as well, allowing Jimmy to be the Ed of this round by taking Toy Story. For me, Toy Story has a very, very special place. And we'll talk about some of that in the next round. Love Toy Story.
There you go. Awesome. Toy Story moves on with a 4-1 vote. Very cool. And now we move into our final region of the Elite Eight, the Animal Kingdom region. We have the number one Lion King roaring into this game versus the number two Tangled. And I'm actually going to start this round out. And I'm going to go right away Lion King. I don't know how I can think anything else. One of the classic Disney movies. Really don't have to explain it. I think it's pretty obvious. We'll see. Jen, you're up.
Well, I'm going to echo Jimmy's sentiment from last week that Tangled is... I don't think it is an easy decision because Tangled... And I don't know. We've seen that one a lot. The one-liners and all that. It prior to Frozen was probably one of the best Disney movies ever made. But The Lion King is so unique. I went with The Lion King barely for that reason alone.
Okay, very good. Sam, you're up.
I also am going to go Lion King, and I will once again suggest that if you've not seen Waking Sleeping Beauty, that you see that documentary. The Lion King is huge. Love it.
Yep, very true, very true. Jimmy?
I actually went Tangled. Tangled in my final four.
Okay, awesome.
I could have.
And how about our friends?
Listeners are 71% Lion King.
Okay, Lion King moves into the final four, and we have our final four, guys.
Woohoo! We have it. Final four.
See, I think that round was harder than the final four will be for me, and maybe even the final game. So,
yeah,
interesting.
Yeah. Very interesting.
So what do we have? We have a 1-1 and a 1-2.
Yeah, no, the seedings proved pretty perfect as we came down to the end here.
Don't blow his head up, please.
Hey, you guys all helped do that. The only question was who.
But you know, if Nemo would have been there.
No. Yeah. The only question is who was on the bottom and who got eliminated first. That's all.
Okay, well, here we go, guys. We have Beauty and the Beast versus Aladdin. And then the other game we're going to have is Toy Story versus Lion King. Check the website out and vote who you would like to win each of these two games. The next time we get together, we're going to go over that final four, come up with our final two teams or movies for the Movie Madness Tournament for 2015.
Remember, go to thedisneynerdspodcast.com/Movie Madness to vote. Thanks.
Okay, guys, so as promised, stay tuned for Sam and Jimmy interviewing Len Testa and Jim Hill. Take it away, Sam.
Hey, guys, Sam from Sam's Dizzy Diary. Jimmy and I have the absolute pleasure of introducing two icons in the Disney podcasting industry, and I mean that. Number one.
Wait, Dirk Bergen's here?
What? No, absolutely not. Are you guys kidding me? Come on. I have with me today Len Testa from touringplans.com, along with his sidekick, Jim Hill. How about that? How are you guys doing?
I'm a sidekick.
Can I do it the other way? I have Jim Hill and his sidekick.
No, that's cool. That means I get to be Gabby Hazer's Smiley Burnett. That's cool.
It's wonderful.
Excuse me, I got to step out and put on a cowboy hat and some chaps, but this is cool.
Do you have a cape, Jim? Do you have a cape?
No, sidekick. Sidekick. Oh. It's Western.
So. Okay. So. All right.
Jim, just look. It could be worse. You could be my sidekick.
Yeah.
So look, yeah, you're on solid ground right now. Just
okay, Gene.
So all of that said, Len, you've been on with us before. We appreciate you coming back. Jim, thank you so much. And before we get started, we hear you on podcasts. We read your blog. Tell me a little about Jim. Where you have all this knowledge? How long have you been following Disney parks? What started you down this path?
I got to get a Reader's Digest version of this story. Basically, I've been covering the company for over three decades now. While I was in the service, I wrote a story about Donald Duck being retired from the U.S. military, that this was your tax dollar at work. The U.S. Army actually paid, I think it was a 29 palms, the base there, for a full retirement ceremony. We're talking 1,000 guys passing a review, and Disney sent every duck costume they had in storage down to this thing. And a friend of mine actually covered it and took this amazing picture of the base commander, who was this complete publicity hog, you know, just sort of doing the classic grip and grin, staring into the camera while Donald shake, you know, a sweaty teenager in a Donald suit is shaking his hand. And Marjorie, who wrote this story, it was a great picture. The story was kind of shaky. And so I asked her, would it be okay if I rewrote the story for my own base newspaper and I used her picture? And she said, sure. But mine got picked up by the AP wire service and went worldwide. And
there's the nut.
Yeah, and but her picture went along, so it was still cool.
Yeah, right.
And Disney at that point kind of opened like a flower. They were like, I mean, this was just a couple of months before Disneyland celebrated its 30th anniversary, and they were like, "Wow, we liked your story. Would you like to come out? You know, we're doing we're doing a 30-hour party on July 17th, and would you like to come out and?"
The so next day,
yes, pretty much.
You mean these 24-hour parties aren't new? They've been doing that for a while.
Oh God, yeah, yeah. In fact, I want to say for the 25th anniversary, that was the first year they did the 25th, and then they came back with this 30-hour party idea. But just a few months later, I'm standing on the roofs of Main Street looking at some really elderly plywood, you know, and thinking that I'm about to, you know, enter the Emporium really, really quickly.
You're going to take the elevator in to the Emporium.
So and just kind of been doing it ever since. So
that's awesome.
That is a fantastic story. Standing on top of the Emporium. How many people can say they've stood on top of the Emporium?
Well, but you're missing the crucial sentence, and then being wrestled to the ground by security afterwards.
Yeah,
you know?
Right. Yeah.
You know, in this case, it was like that they let us go up. You know, they weren't entirely happy, but they let us go up. That's in fact, just weird off ramp with this story. I had taken this was the summer supposedly that Amtrak was gonna just fold, and so I figured if I, you know, kind of doing a trip up to Disneyland for a significant thing, and Walt's all about trains, so you know I actually took a train from Boston out to L.A. by way of Seattle, where a friend of mine had just gotten married and from the service and was staying with him, and as a you know, it's a belated wedding present. I said, look, I can buy you tickets to this event and, you know, I can put you up for a hotel. You know, just come on down and do this. And so, I got on the train and continued down to Anaheim, and they drove down from Seattle, and the two of them fought the entire way in the car. And so now, you know, picture this. This is what they did. All right. So everybody, they clear the park. They start loading people in at like 10 o'clock at night, and they load everybody into Main Street and are holding them there. And then there's this countdown for midnight, so the 30-hour party can begin. And so it's 5, 4, 3, 2, and she turns to him and says, I want a divorce. One. And now, confetti
Wait a minute.
raining down, all right, and they created these giant candle balloons that rise up around Main Street, and everyone's singing and dancing. He's like, what? Divorce? You know, and it's like, you know, I didn't run into him again till 2 o'clock in the morning, and he was like, there's a bar in here somewhere, right? And it's like,
No, there's not.
You know, sometimes, so just to be clear here, sometimes it's not the happiest place on earth. So,
again, Jim, we appreciate you coming on. And the reason we wanted to, first of all, I'm a big fan of yours and Len's and the podcast. You guys are doing a great job over there. A lot of inside knowledge. And over the past few shows we've done on the Disney Nerds podcast, we've been kind of talking about just all the different changes and things going on, especially at Hollywood Studios, and what it's going to be called and what's going to be going where, and all this speculation. So we thought, who better to have on than you guys?
Studios is tough. It's I'm updating the unofficial guide theme park chapters this week, and you know
you deleted a lot is what I'm thinking, Lynn.
Well, yeah, there's a lot. I freed up a lot of pages, but you know the thing that I'm really wrestling with here is do you? I mean, we're a consumer oriented guide, right?
Sure.
So if you've got to pay $103, can you realistically recommend to a family of four that they spend $400 to get in to the studios?
No, not at this point. But
I'm thinking I can't in good conscience say, you know, this is worth your hard-earned dollars.
I did think of a good tagline for the next edition of the unofficial guide, though.
All right, go ahead.
30% lighter.
30% lighter. West Park.
Yeah, right. So, you know, I completely agree with you, Lynn. With that being said, and I don't like to be negative Nancy on the parks.
Story. That's actually my stripper name.
And he's good. I mean, he's good.
So, you know, I always like to preface it with saying that I'm not so short-sighted that I don't see the future of the studios and am very excited about what's going to come. But you're right. It'd be tough to justify somebody spending $400 for a family of four to go to studios right now.
But
realistically, how many people are actually buying single day tickets?
Hardly.
You know, so yeah. And
I'd be shocked if it's more than 15% of the single day tickets are going to the studios. I'd just be my sense is half to two thirds go to the Magic Kingdom, and
I think they all go to. If you're showing up, you have one day, you haven't been there in a long time, you're gonna pay the $100 for a single ticket. I'm going to Magic Kingdom. I can't see going, especially if you have kids.
If you haven't been there in 10 years, you might go to the Animal Kingdom. If you haven't been,
sure.
You could go to Epcot for dining.
Yeah.
But I can't see how you would. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm telling people go to Universal, go to Legoland. I mean,
oh no,
for $100.
I hear you. So let's talk studios, right? So much has happened, the big things are obvious, right? Everybody jumps on. Oh, the hat's gone, or this is gone, and Starbucks there. Uh-oh. Obviously, there's a much bigger plan that they have yet to reveal, or that it continues to change, which is why it hasn't been revealed. And it's the entire park. I mean, I'm seeing things change walking down Sunset Boulevard that are little subtle changes that lend itself to be something bigger, like the Turkey Lake place is gone, and there's a new pin store here that looks to be temporary, and how is Planet Hollywood still in this park?
Well, I mean, Planet Hollywood is still in this park for the same reason that Planet Hollywood is at Downtown Disney and soon to be reimagined for Disney Springs. There's a contract,
yeah.
You know, and, you know, and they do enough business, you know, to warrant being in that park, you know, or, you know, to justify what they have to pay Disney to be in that park. What's weird is that I was out, I want to say 2 weeks ago, in California at the themed, at the Thea, awards, the Thea Summit and Gala. This is the Themed Entertainment Association, Once, you know, once a year, everybody in the themed entertainment industry gets together, and ironically enough, it's at the Disneyland Hotel in the Convention Center.
Oh, that's funny.
And you know, and they close the doors, and you get all the really good stories because these are people who make theme park attractions and are talking to other people who are in the same industry. So you don't get a lot of talk of, you know, magic and wonder and pixie dust. You get our budget was cut 3 months out,
right.
You know, stuff like that.
A lot more nuts and bolts type of conversations.
Yeah. And I will tell you, and I know this is going to depress people to hear this, but I was talking with Frank Reifschneider, who's the head of publicity or one of the heads of publicity for Walt Disney Imagineering. And, you know, the topic of Star Wars Celebration, the 3 day long event that'll be at the Anaheim Convention Center next week, about, you know, so Star Wars and the studios there, and they're going to be hyping The Force Awakens in a big way, and sure. Disney Channel's there because they're hyping their second season of Star Wars Rebels. And so what are you guys doing? And he kind of blinked at me and said, I don't think we're doing anything. You know,
it's like, tell me, Jim, what are we doing?
Well, no, it was one of these things where he said, look, in all honesty, we don't have anything planned yet. Whether
for
or
next
not...
week?
Yeah.
For next week.
But, you know, they're going to be publishing the schedule fairly shortly. And if he was spoofing me, then we'll find out then. But it's been Star Wars. The weird thing is the big pieces haven't really changed. Their locations have. But, you know, I mean, you have to understand that in a lot of ways, Disney is approaching Star Wars the way they approach the Fab Five. You know, I mean, for example, one of the or two of the big chunks of this for both coasts are the fact that people are going to want FaceTime with classic Star Wars characters. So sure. there's one building that's popped up in every iteration of the plan that's just sort of this vaguely Death Star looking building. Where you can go get your picture taken with either Darth Vader or the Emperor. And likewise, there's always been a full-size version of the Millennium Falcon where you walk up the ramp, the gangway, yeah. And slowly make your way through to the cockpit, and there's Chewie, and you can get your picture taken with him. And because this is the thing, they have been focus grouping this thing to death. In fact, you know, I keep hammering on this, but if you really want to know what Disney is up to, pay attention to Craigslist, because they're constantly recruiting focus groups to come into, to come on the Disney campus in Glendale and, you know, be focus grouped about we're thinking about doing this ride or we're thinking about this experience or that sort of thing. And so, yeah, they are, you know, I know it sounds strange to think this because, you know, that they were supposed to have begun construction in January until somebody decided, you know, we have to lose the hat first. You know, for a number of reasons, one of which was they needed to get the new stage that was going to be, you know, the place where so many of the things going forward are going to be presented. I mean, they knew at that point that they were going to be circling back on, Frozen Summer Fun, and
Star Wars Weekends and
Star Wars Weekends, and you know the Disney Villains event is coming back, and you need stage space for that.
Is that going to be a single? Are we talking a single event again? Or are they thinking of expanding that multiple days? The Villains event,
and that's going to be a permanent stage there.
Well, I
we're not 100%, but that's
we have speculated recently. I'll say I have that the walls aren't gone yet, and the hat's gone. So I think the walls will come down with a stage behind them, but I could be completely wrong. I
mean, you know that it's more to the effect of that it's the park has proven that a stage in that location is very useful. But at the same time, anticipate that this is going to be a stage that can be very much multi-purpose. You're going to see the tree come back in the center of the park there. There's a plan to bring back the train set, but this will also be where, you know, there'll be enough stage space left that you could do something, you know, holiday oriented there. There's a lot, you know, I mean, part of the problem of what's about to happen to the studios, and you have to really be blunt, you know, you have to be honest. This place was designed as a production center, but it hasn't really produced television or movies in what?
Long time.
Yeah, 10, 15 years, Len?
Yeah, it's been about that long, yeah.
Okay, so, you know, it's now turning this into a really for real theme park, and then addressing the issues of, you know, well, while we're doing this, do we want to tweak the parade route? Because, you know, for example, the parade has always had to curve around Echo Lake, but Echo Lake is going away.
Right.
You know,
yes, they can put the parade route where they want.
See, right. And
it's going to be wide open.
Yeah, so there's a lot of chess going on right now. You know, trying to make decisions. I mean, if, you know, for example, just sort of staring down the barrel of, okay, if we're really, really committing to Pixar Place and we're sending people deep into the park, that street that we send people up to go to Toy Story Midway Mania.
Mickey Avenue.
Yeah, that was never intended to be. You know, that was backstage. Yeah. And so it's like, all right, so do we create a blow through? I mean, do something similar to what they just did at the Magic Kingdom. In fact, you know, what's kind of interesting about the new breezeway or the temporary breezeway they put in is that Disney's actually committed to it. You can act, if you're standing in the new hub and looking backstage behind Main Street, that area between Main Street and Tomorrowland.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yep. They painted all of the buildings. They are now.
It's themed behind there, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so that's the whole notion. It's like, okay, so if we decide, and then that, you know, if we decide we need a breezeway that actually goes behind Midway Mania, because, you know, there aren't any trams running back there anymore.
And no. You're talking about a breezeway just specifically, just maybe to get people out of there.
Well, also to understand that, you know, the back lot eventually does become the Florida version of Cars Land, but it becomes the Florida version of Cars Land that's enclosed because it rains here a lot, you know. Yeah. So I think
it's going to have to be smaller ride, don't you think? I mean, that's a huge area to enclose.
No, absolutely. And that coupled with don't plan on, you know, the sort of rock work that you saw in California, at least not of that size, because, you know, that coupled with the fact that it's all swamp back there. And it's like, you know, buildings do settle. In fact, that's honestly supposedly one of the reasons that Pirates is going down for a lengthy rehab this time around, is that, you know, I mean, that building went in really quickly in 72, 73 and.
They got 45 years out of it. Good enough.
Yeah,
right.
45 years and 7.5 movies.
Yeah, right. There's a lot of issues to be dealt with because they rushed that one.
So two big things you talked about there, Jim. One, Star Wars Land, and the other, Pixar Place / Cars Land / whatever. And those are the two big things that we keep hearing about. Now, one thing you mentioned that I hadn't heard before, Star Wars Land. Are we talking two cookie cutters, one in California, one in Florida, or elements of each in different places? What are they thinking?
Well, I mean, you know, there is going to be some repetition. I mean, face it, it's not like people in California aren't going to want to see Chewbacca or, you know, walk up into the Millennium Falcon. Likewise, you know, people are going to want the Emperor's throne room. You know, it's so you will see duplication there. You may not see the exact same show building. And yeah, that there are things like the X-Wing Spinner, which, depending on, you know, its placement and that sort of thing, you know, that's going to probably wind up in both parks. But now, you know, you got to understand in California, they're actually talking about this is being built, you know, that they're going to shut down Mickey's Toontown. and, you know, throw Star Wars back there.
And it totally makes sense because it's so self-contained.
No, that's it exactly.
They could do everything they wanted to right there.
Go under the track, yeah, and there you go.
And I mean, I think it also makes complete sense to have some things duplicated because, you know what? Sure. How much more efficient are you being if you make two of them?
No.
Well, I mean, once the artwork and the engineering's done,
yeah,
you know, yeah, it's a lot easier to make two of them than it is to, you know, make something completely different and start at the bottom.
Yeah, but, I mean, if they've got three or four ideas, it's easier than six or eight ideas, right?
Right.
Okay. But here's the important thing to understand, that you're going to see California fast-tracked, and there's two, you know, there's two reasons for that, or two words, Harry Potter.
Yeah, Harry Potter, I was going to say, yeah.
You know, I was just out in California, again, the day after the Theas, the people at Universal were nice enough to walk me through the Simpsons construction site. And Potter, I mean, Potter is really far along. You know, that's I know that Rick West at Theme Park Adventure had some amazing shots. And, you know, part of the terms and conditions of being walked through Simpsons prior to opening was I couldn't bring a camera. So I couldn't, you know, do any photography of this. But
you didn't have your spy button cam?
No. What's interesting about when you've been doing this as long as I've been doing it, it's just half the time is people, you know, start telling you a story by saying, I'll tell you this, but you can't tell anybody else.
Right.
You know, okay, for example, I'm sitting on stories from the 1941 Disney studio strike where, wow. I mean, I'm serious. I have to wait for people to die.
Wow.
All right. Before I can share
like
these stories.
It's like a mob story.
It is.
Yeah. You know, they're pieces of this company's history that people are like, you know, I'll tell you this and you can tell that in 5 years or 10 years or whatever.
Oh, I mean, it goes along with the territory because you've got a good reputation. And if you want people to continue to tell you those things, you've got to be trustworthy. And they have to know that one story leaks that's not supposed to leak and your reputation is bruised. Nobody will tell you anything else ever again, you know?
We won't tell anybody, Jim. You can tell us everything. We won't tell anybody.
Right. Yeah.
Well, like, you know, the toughest part is I'm sitting in like a five-story conference room with John Murdy, who's the head of Universal Creative. And we're talking about that this year's the 50th anniversary of the tram tour. And they're about to launch a brand new nighttime tram tour. And later that afternoon, I actually got to walk through the new Fast and Furious Supercharged, the new finale for the tram tour. And that was just insane. I mean, it just like two airplane hangars with the biggest movie screens that have ever been created. And this is, you know, they've actually figured out how to end the tram tour with you're looking at these giant screens and thinking that you're being pulled through the streets of Los Angeles by two tow trucks that are, you know, being driven by Vin Diesel and friends at 120 miles an hour.
Wow.
And they actually end it with the classic, you know, I mean, according to the movies, Los Angeles is filled with bridges that haven't been completed. You know,
everyone knows urban revitalization is a hallmark of Los Angeles transportation.
Yeah, but you only build half the bridge and then you walk away for a couple of months. All right. So you actually make the jump with the tram, you know, it's nuts. But anyway, I'm in this conference room talking with John, but directly behind me is the Harry Potter construction site. And for an hour, I have to sit with my back to, and again, the buildings are open.
Did they put you in a swivel chair or a non-swivel chair?
It was a swivel chair. But again, you got to be polite. You got to focus. You got to ask your questions. And, you know, and only occasional, oh, I've dropped my recorder. Oh, I've dropped my shoe. Oh, my pants fell off. You know, just sort of, you know, whatever excuse to turn around and eyeball the construction site. And, I mean, it's impressive as hell. But Disney... that's the other thing I think people don't really, Disney fans never like to admit, is that, you know, Walt Disney World is a destination resort, okay? Mm-hmm. Disneyland is really the world's most famous regional theme park. And, You know, and actually, if you look at the way Disney markets the place, whether it's Halloween time or, you know, that's going to come, for the Christmas celebration or come for our summer fireworks, that's how they go after the locals. They're trying to get two trips a year out of, you know, the people who were within 100 miles of the park. And yeah, they've got an amazing base of annual pass holders. But in the end, it's about getting the locals to come out to that park. And that's a fiercely competitive market. I mean, between Universal, Knott's, Magic Mountain, you know, SeaWorld now to a lesser extent. You know, if you want to talk about a wounded brand,
yeah.
You know, but Legoland, you know, Legoland. So there's a lot of stuff out there. And Disney, they're just kicking themselves now because they just dithered for so long about, you know, do we, you know, they really should have started work on Star Wars like a year and a half ago. But that was Iger. Iger actually hit the brakes and said, look, you know, we're relaunching the franchise. We're setting up a new trilogy. We should probably wait to see what JJ is doing and make decisions off of what goes into the parks based on how people react to this stuff. So,
the reactions are good.
Well, that is the hope.
What I find interesting about that whole story, and you mentioning Universal, goes back to the reason why Studios is there to begin with. And I know you've talked about this on the Dish podcast with Len before, and the fact that it exists because Universal was creating a tram tour in Florida, and Eisner wanted to get there before they did. And the whole Florida movie market just sort of fell apart, and we heard Disney for years, rumors, oh, a fifth park. And to me, it's like the park they had is going to evolve into that fifth gate that they don't build because they have a park that can be reused.
Yeah, they could finish They could finish the third and fourth before they build the fifth. That'd be great.
Yeah,
right. And that's almost what they're doing here. They're rebooting the whole place.
Yeah.
And don't forget what's going on though with Disney Springs. I mean that, in a lot of ways, that is a game changer. But that's also in a weird sort of way that's going after the locals.
Great example, Splitsville. That's all about locals.
Well, you know, and it's interesting you bring that up because I was just talking with somebody who's a manager there, and they were talking about the fact that, in a weird sort of way, if anybody's benefited from the fact that Pleasure Island closed, it's Splitsville. I mean, you know, there's so many conventions or, you know, large family reunions or that sort of thing that go down there and are looking for something to do at night, and, you know, the island's a construction zone, and all of those nightclubs are gone. So Splitsville,
it's family friendly entertainment.
Yeah, and
it's not a movie.
No, right? That's exactly. But more often than not, now, if you go over there, you know, middle of the week, it's closed to the public. You know, it's been bought out for the night, and you know, sometimes it's the entire building that's bought out. So they're doing great.
Len, how's it in the book? Splitsville, does it get good ratings? Has it been?
Yeah, it does. I mean, we say it's expensive.
When you bowl and eat, is that what you're comparing to, or how do you list that?
The whole experience, probably.
It's around. It's like $20 per person per game, right?
I think it's
that sounds about right.
Yeah, so family of four is like $80 to $100, and if you want prioritized bowling, I think it's like $25 a person.
That's pretty stiff.
So it's $100 to bowl. I mean, yeah. I mean, what is it where you guys live? It's not $100
for either. $100 for sure.
I think it's like $6 a game.
Yeah, I was going to say $4.50, $5 if you need the shoes.
Yeah, right? If you need the shoes, yeah. So, you know, so they're a multiple of that. But, you know, but people pay it, and they pay it because, well, it's vacation, and, yeah, we'll spend $100. Yeah. And, you know, while they're there, they'll get something to eat, and, you know, it's another $100 to get something to eat or whatever. So, you know, they're dropping $200, $225.
Yeah, not even breaking a sweat.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, definitely not considered a cheap night out.
No. Nothing gets.
I mean, for a local,
is there a cheap night out?
I mean, if you're out there on vacation, it's one thing. But if you're a local,
Yeah, if you're a local, you're going there for special occasions, or you're going there to drink one or two drinks all night, or maybe that's the thing that you do, you know, on your weekend for your big meal out or something.
Sure.
So back to Studios and the two big expansions, and someone mentioned, I don't know if it was Len or Jim, that Echo Lake's probably going away, and we've heard a little bit about that. So as you're coming down, you know, Hollywood Boulevard, you sort of make the left after that first store where Echo Lake is. And that, so what's the word now? What are the
That's supposed to be your entrance to Tatooine, and you're going to be, you know, if you remember it from, you know, the movies, you've got that, you know, distinct rounded desert palette, you know, or, you know, style architecture. You're going to have, you know, do back photo ops. You're going to have, you know, the stormtroopers wandering the streets, checking ID. I mean, it's, you know, and of course you're going to have the cantina where, and I think Glenn and I were talking about this, that Disney really wanted to use the Harry Potter playbook. They wanted to give people a couple of dining experiences. And let's be honest here, they wanted their own butterbeer. And
like nothing else. They wanted their own.
Yeah, I mean, that didn't make it. No, not the same thing.
Well, you know.
Not the same
thing. Not for lack of trying.
It's not the same, yeah.
No, it's not the same.
And you got to love the pairing there. Frozen, you know, apple juice with, you know, hints of mango with the world's greasiest pork loin. It's like, yeah, this is why I go to Florida.
Well, the acids and the fats balance out, Jim. That's what it is.
Hurry up. Give me another bite.
It's a free note.
Seriously, once you eat the pork loin, you could pull a Spider-Man. You could climb the wall. I mean, it's just that's how greasy your fingers get.
I haven't had it, but I've heard good things about it, actually.
Yeah, it's it's the porcine equivalent of the turkey leg. But
right.
Let's just put it this way. You know, before you order, schedule the angioplasty. Okay, I'm just putting that out there.
Dick Cheney comes out and says, "Have you ever had a stent?"
So
I've got a couple models I need to show you here.
So they've been as you come down there, right, and you head towards Echo Lake, the Hollywood and Vine. They've been doing that Jedi breakfast during Star Wars weekends, and in fact, now it's from May the 4th all the way through Star Wars weekends every day, not just on the weekends. Is that does it potentially reach all the way to there and the 50s prime time, or are we talking Echo Lake tours?
Either that or it's going to be a huge wall right in front of 50s prime time. I mean, I don't see how that fits in with.
I don't think it fits at all.
I don't think it fits either.
You know, I the other thing you have to take into account here is that there was originally a plan where Indiana Jones, because Disney did not have the rights, the stunt show was going to come down, and that was going to be where they were going to drop the speeder bike attraction. But then, Disney actually, reopened negotiations with Paramount, got, persuaded them to deliver their half share of the, that character. I mean, Paramount
because
just
they
be
got
clear.
The other half with Lucas, right? Is that how that happened?
Yeah. So, but that was the thing. You can't make a movie. With just hanging out, it's like we can only do Indiana Jones from the waist up, when they got those rights, it's like, well, okay, hold off. And more to the point, I mean, as Len will tell you, how many months out of the year is that filled with little cheerleader groups or
at least two and maybe three? I mean, pretty much every slow season is a cheerleading competition in the studios. So, that's going to be booked for a while.
Indy sticks around. Is what,
Indeed. Yeah. And plus, I mean, let's face it, they can't close it for the foreseeable future because what's left?
No, right? That's it exactly. It's got to hang in there. I mean, I think that's the other thing people have to understand, that we are looking, in the case of the change out of the studios between the Pixar elements and the Star Wars elements, this can possibly stretch out 5 to 7 years.
Oh, easy. Yeah.
Yeah. With, an individual attractions being folded in, don't get me wrong, they'd love to have it done faster, but for example, right now, Disney's A-team is overworking on Avatar and
Avatar, Disney Springs,
Rivers of Light, all that
Shanghai,
stuff,
right?
Rivers
of Light, Rivers of Light, geez, that's like the freaking Exxon Valdez of nighttime. Spectacular. See what they're doing to that landscape. But before we go there, what about the we started talking about the food in Star Wars, and I think we left it off there, but the issue was that
blue milk spoilers.
There's only two
Blue milk, but what else is there in the Star Wars franchise? So it's not like Harry Potter where you know, he's in the university. There are meal scenes.
Yeah, constantly. There are feasts. There are, you know, let's have breakfast before the Quidditch match. Let's have a late night snack. You know.
And we know next to nothing about, again, I say this all the time, we know next to nothing about the retail and restaurant opportunities on the Death Star. Because it just wasn't part of the movie, right?
That's right. There has to be retail.
Food court and Spaceballs.
What does the Death Star's food court look like?
It looks like the same one in Spaceballs.
Is there a Chipotle?
I think you're right.
Is there a...
Well, again, in fact, it's funny you bring this up because evidently there was, you know, they're watching these movies really, really closely. And, you know, somebody, remember the scene in Empire where Lando is leading Leia and Han, you know, to, I think we solved our problem, and opens the door and there's Boba Fett and there's, you know, Darth Vader, and yeah. Han pulls his gun and, you know, Vader makes a gesture and the gun flies across the... And it, seriously, evidently it was a meeting. It's like, well, you know, that shows they serve brunch, you know.
Was there a turkey on the table there? That's what you got to think about. That's crazy. JJ, you know, hurry up. We need a romantic restaurant in the new movie. Do something.
That's right.
Jim and I joked about this. The over-under on dining scenes in Force Awakens is like 4.
Oh, yeah,
God, every 15 minutes someone's going to be eating. And I guarantee you they talk about there'll be more food dialogue in here than an episode of Good Eats. I was about to say,
than all the other movies combined.
Okay,
but just to change the subject here, and I want to...
Hoth root beer? What?
Well, there you go.
Hoth root beer.
Drink Hoth Cola.
That just kind of redefines the brain freeze. I want to talk about, to jump parks here for a second, because there's been a lot of talk about what's going on with imagination, what's going on, you know, with that.
That was on my list to ask you about, because haven't they now at imagination, didn't they just pull Captain EO and start to do some Cinderella previews
there?
Well, I think I've actually seen what they're going to do with it. Ooh. I was at Pixar last week.
Pixar.
And got... to see the first hour
that Disney owns.
Tiny.
But Figment had nothing to do with it, so I don't remember Dreamfinder or Figment in any Pixar movie.
Okay, but there's a movie coming out in June called Inside Out that's set inside the human brain.
Oh yeah. I loved your Twitter thing on this. This was great.
This is an amazing film. This is Pete Docter. This is the guy who did Monsters, Inc. Up. And it literally is set inside the head with the five, predominant emotions: anger, fear, joy, sadness,
sloth. That's my actually, head. Sorry.
Wrong movie.
That's right. But they've done a spectacular job with this, and more to the point, if you're paying attention during Flower and Garden. Just as you're entering imagination, there's suddenly a character garden.
I saw this. Yeah,
that sort of hints at these characters. My understanding is that Imagineering, in fact, they're not showing the movie. I guess the movie finished production 2 weeks ago, and they've begun showing it around the company, and everyone's kind of losing their mind because it's like it's so well done. The characters are so distinct. And it's just, and more to the point, it's finally the answer to what the hell to do with Journey into Imagination.
But what, didn't they do that in Cranium Command?
Yeah, we had that over in the Festival Center.
This is entirely different, you know, and in fact.
Because it's a girl.
Well, there you go. And more to the point, you know, and not to be blunt here, guys, but it's Pixar. If you want to get something built in the park these days, if you can start the meeting by saying, and it's based on a Pixar film, you're halfway home. So honestly, I will bet you good money that, within 2 years, there is going to be an Inside Out themed film replacing EO.
So that was going to be my question.
You think it'll be a film?
Yeah.
Oh, it's gotta be, you know, and I would imagine that, you know, given that the image work celebrates the senses, it's entirely possible we'll finally see that area, which, you know, that it's a problematic area for a lot of reasons, most of them related to Americans with Disability Act, access.
I've heard it's a lot of office. They've using as temporary office space now, but I guess they can always their cubicle walls. They can come down, right?
Well, and it's also – it tends to be when they're betaing something. I mean, for example, when they were doing Kim Possible.
Yeah.
And then the Phineas and Ferb thing, those were done up there as well. But here finally is the property coming over the hill that, makes sense. What that means about for imagination downstairs, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, I know that in fact, I actually had the producer tell me where in the movie that they put, they go to Imagination Land. Again, you're inside of a kid's head. And so this is where everything gets dreamed up. And at one point in the film, when they're getting on the train of thought, if you look in the background, he threw in a picture of Figment.
Yes.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
So,
very nice. Very cool.
But, as we get closer to the release
date. The little boy in my head was going, tell me there's a Figment. Tell me there's a Figment. Tell me there's a Figment.
There's a Figment. Yes. There's a Figment. Yes. But yeah, I think this is what's going to come over the hill to save the movie. But at the same time, you've got Jerry Reese working on, that Soaring redo. So,
Soaring or Illuminations?
Illuminations is going away this year. It's being replaced.
Right. So what's Jerry working on? Soaring, Illuminations, or both?
Well, no. Jerry's a film guy. Illuminations may, the redo does feature some film elements, but this is still a nighttime spectacular. This is still, we're not talking about, a World of Color type redo. It's too big a space.
You can't drain that lagoon to get in the bottom of it. Right?
No, I don't impossible. Think they would do it.
Not without exposing the sinkhole, and we don't want to do that. So
never fill it back up.
Yeah.
So the new iteration of Illuminations at this point, we're thinking different music, same type.
Are they keeping the globe?
I know that that they have. There's a couple.
Glenn's
of
got a place for it. If they're not, Glenn has a place.
Yeah,
for it.
That's actually yes. If somebody does, it would be Glenn. That would be perfect in the backyard. This is more about the new colored lasers. That they're trying to do something in regard to the fireworks. I don't know if you've been in there on a night when the wind shifts and
It's amazing. The ash falls down in your eye, and
worse.
Oh no, it's like being in the explosions. I actually caught the paper wadding from one of the larger shells, and I actually kept pieces of it.
Oh, nice.
But
nothing says that's an enjoyable way to end your evening at Epcot like reenacting Pompeii.
not only that, but you tend to get to when you go through airport security and they swab your luggage down random.
Explosives.
I haven't been around handling any fireworks. I did see Illuminations last night.
I was thinking of standing next to Lynn. This is the thought that went through my head. I'm standing next to Lynn, and I go, Lynn, you smell like Rome is burning.
There's the beef jerky. I'm not going to go anywhere else with that.
We were just about to think that someone does it. Disney could sell products. We could sell that smell.
Right. Oh, air freshener. Oh boy.
There you go.
I heard Illuminations sometime in October it'll be the switch out. So.
Yeah. So before
they've got new lasers up in Epcot, and there might be other stuff going on. Jim, I actually heard another rumor about that thing you talked about in Canada too.
Good. I like occasionally to be right. Helps with the reputation. So again, this is above.
Whoa.
I was thinking that too. You can't. Yeah. Come on.
All right, what's going on again?
Bieber, finally?
It's tied to Sticky Beavers are coming back.
Well, again, it was supposed to be retail space in Canada. In fact, I guess in 2008, there was an Anne of Green Gables store that, as you come up the steps.
The hotel in Canada? Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's nothing right now, right?
Yeah.
It's a facade. So you're telling me there's something in there?
Well, I mean, actually, they did all the prep work. In fact, what's really creepy, evidently, is if you can open the door, the area music is playing and the phones are live. I mean, you know, they were ready to move in. And, you know, but like a lot of stuff in 2008, you know, just everything fell off the table.
Jim, and let me tell you, if you need a guy that is willing to go pull on a door handle, Sam is the guy.
It sounded like a
He will look behind every curtain, inside every booth, under, over walls, pull door handles. He will do it.
Yeah, that there was a time, too, that I used to, you know, that in Jim Hill-E's cast member only meant, look behind this wall, you know, and it just, you know, then Disney security, you know, they kind of frown on that sort of thing. Right. But
yeah, they do. That's why I don't do that, Jimmy.
Good to hear. But I think I've told this, the only time I ever did this and then regretted it was I was at Downtown Disney. Do you remember there was like a 5-minute long period where they were building the shop there that was supposed to support David Copperfield's Magical Underground? I mean, it was literally right next door to the AMC theater. You know, it was there on the right as you were walking up to the theater, and they had painted it, you know, the windows black, and they had, you know, put in gold trim, you know, the initials of, you know, David Copperfield Magic Underground. And I just couldn't help myself. I walked over and I opened the door and it was unlocked and looked in, and it's all insulation. It's conduit. It's clearly not been completed. And it's like, oh, and this was the last thing I did before I headed to the airport. And so closed the door, walked out to the parking lot, was driving back to the airport, and it's like, oh, you stupid son of a bitch. It's a magic trick. Open the door a second time.
You know, rabbits
only
everywhere.
Operational store, you know, David himself everywhere. Is there. That's selling good. T-shirts, and it's like, oh, moron. So
back it up, Cop, before we leave. Go straight across the lagoon, Norway.
Yeah,
this new building that they're talking about. Are we
I'm not
see...
familiar with this place called Norway.
Well, I think they renamed it. I forget the name.
Arendelle.
So are we going to see a castle across the way? That's my question. Or are they going to have a theme outside?
Pause here for a sec, because this actually happened at the Thea Awards. You know, the Thea Summit, it turns out there are theme parks in Norway. And I swear to God that there's this theme park that's open for 3 months out of the year that features Jimmy, the little gray tractor.
I need a t-shirt.
You know, You know, and so, you know, you get on the back of the little gray tractor and you ride through this farmscape. But the guy, when he's picking up his award, you know, at the gala, you know, the next night, it says, I have to explain to you folks that we no longer call it Norway. We call it the land of frozen. So when Norwegians are making these jokes, all right, you know, it's just like, that gives you some idea of, you know, the impact this film has had. Look, the you are going to see a building that sort of lends itself, you know, that clearly has the iconic, you know, that sort of stuff from the Frozen film. But that's next door. Right. That's where the meet and greet is going to be built on top of the old Norse ship Playland.
And some parking lots, it looks like.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And actually, it was Len to give Mr. Testa credit. He was the one who looked at the site plan for that and figured out what was going on, like, you know, in regard to the three different Annas and Elsas.
What? No.
It's true.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Little gray, the tractor thing is a real thing from Norway.
I didn't think he made it up.
Are there t-shirts?
Its name is Fergie, actually. F-E-R-G-A.
Oh, Fergie. I'm sorry. Sorry.
Little Gray, Jimmy little sounds gray better. Fergie.com. That's not the name of an adult porn site. It is for all the world. It looks like Thomas the Tank Engine, but as a tractor.
There you go.
Wow, I do need a T-shirt.
Okay,
I want to
little
gray Jimmy.
Fergie. Really, you know that's not what they call that woman who used to be a member of the royal family. It's like
yeah. Sorry, the land of the little gray tractor.
Koenig Park.
Oh yeah.
But very cute.
One in the New Parkland Limited Budget Wilderness category.
Wow.
Was it the only entry in that category?
Holy cow.
Actually, no.
I thought Dewey Decimal System was specific.
Right. Yeah, yeah. And man, you should have seen the swimsuit competition.
Yeah, I was going to say, we're thinking out like on that one.
So, But no, Len was the one who looked at the site plan and realized that, what is it? It's 2-4 Fastpass Plus and 1 Standby. Is that?
It may be all Fastpass. They have the configuration set up to be all Fastpass too.
Mm-hmm.
That's the config. So any.
But they could do any combination of it. My sense is it'll be 2-in-1.
Right. Yeah.
So I would expect some type of an Olaf in the queue area, something like a Mr. Potato Head type thing.
Possibly, but the big thing is I think Jim, you said that they're gonna redo Acreshoes to be more be our guest like.
The hard reality here, guys, is that you were gonna see that they anticipate, when this opens, and by the way, much like Avatar, the opening date of this thing is slid. There's no way they're going to make holiday 2015 now, so they're looking at first quarter of 2016, so sometime between February and March of next year. They anticipate that when they open this thing that, you know, they're going to see a 20% bump in attendance at Epcot, and it's all going to be in the back of, you know, families who you're just coming to.
It's all going to be in the southeast corner of the park.
Yeah, I mean, just this stampede of people going to do Frozen,
expand the margarita stand, that's for sure.
On the heels of you know, the Princess meet and greet will probably open a few months after the ride opens, and they just anticipate that it within 6-8 months they will just, you know, they're going to try to keep Anchor House for a while to placate the hardcore fans that have been complaining, but in the end, it's just like, that's going, that's Princess dining. That'll be where you can, you know, all of the Disney princesses who, you know, who've come to spend time with Anna and Elsa. That's a character dining up opportunity.
So the other princesses
they've got to plus that up because it's not good.
Well, never mind that. Just airing out 20 plus years of herring. You know, just
smoked herring. It's true.
I mean, that was the thing, and it would go there to dine, and it's like, wow, lovely, and then it's like, I didn't know you could do this many bad things to small fish. You know, just sort of like, you know, no, that's I haven't been back since. So, and I know that makes, you know, the hardcore Epcot fans just crazy. I know it makes them crazy to have. Wonders of Life, you know, basically closed, you know, 8 months out of the year, except when it's open for Flower and Garden and Food and Wine.
There's a lot of room back there. Are there two simulators still back there from Body Wars?
They're still there. So did I tell you we got to go into Wonders of Life when we recreated the Maelstrom ride for reunion?
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
They let us upstairs in one. So we were. Did you guys hear the story?
No.
So we were going to, for a reunion last December,
right?
For the WWE Today podcast, we were going to recreate the Maelstrom ride using 200 people as extras. And great. So, I mean, we have a script, we have props that we've, you know, spent months getting. I painted background scenery almost full size background scenery for this whole thing, and it's, you know, it's on poster board that, you know, I'm rolling up, and, you know, we're driving down with a car full of stuff. So we're supposed to do this on a Saturday. We're doing the script walkthrough on Wednesday, and Becky Minkin from MEI Travel, who's sponsoring Reunion, calls up Disney and says, there's absolutely no way we're going to be able to do this in front of Norway. Because the idea was we would just show up in front of Norway and do it.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, and so Disney security came back and said, you know, you can't do it because you'll cause traffic blockages, and, you know, even if you could do it all in 10 minutes, which you can't, but even if you could do it all in 10 minutes, you're going to impede traffic flow so much it's going to become a safety issue. So they actually gave us the old upstairs club-level room of Wonders of Life for free, I might add.
Oh, wow.
For free. Yeah, wow. Decent move by them. It was very, very appreciated. But we recreated it. You can go look at it on online. There's a, you know,
that's funny.
It's like Reunion 2014. But we did it. But on the way out, we actually got to poke around really, really quickly. We were the last people to leave. So the cast members had all already gone. except for one who was like literally locking the door. So we had time to run down the stairs while she was locking the doors and poke our heads around. But everything looks to be still there. The making of me thing is still there. I mean, you know, some parts around the middle of it have been taken out, but I mean, largely speaking, it's all still there. Wow.
Did you guys argue over who got to be Vikings and who had to be trolls?
No, we actually had enough people. We had 200 volunteers. The tough part was we had to come up with at the end there's that parade scene in the film. We did the film too at the end.
Oh my god!
So I actually got little
stuff from the 80s.
Yeah, that and we found I found toothpicks with flags of Norway on them, 100 pack, and that's what they. But the funny thing is I tell people I actually went to the real Norway because I love the country of Norway and Epcot so much, and the fact that it's gone now just saddens me beyond words.
Well, but you know the hard reality is even Disney did go to Norway multiple times because again the way these contracts are written about we just like Canada, look, we have to update this film. And, we need you to put some money into the upkeep, to meet us halfway.
And we knew there was talk because there were actually articles in Norwegian press about it. Yeah. So we know that there was at least conversation, but ultimately they decided not to pony up the money.
Yeah, I'd heard those rumors. I didn't know that it's a lot, you hear so much stuff, it's hard to know. But I'd heard that before that Disney approached Norway and Norway kind of shunned them and didn't want to pony up any money.
And the irony is that in 88, or actually 89, after a year after the attraction opened, they had seen depending on who you talk to, it was either a 200% jump or a 400% jump in tourism from the United States that was directly attributable to, that attraction.
I went. Wow. Yeah. I went. I went expressly because of it. It's funny, in our Disney Cruise Line book, I actually do a tour of Oslo that's based on things that you find in Epcot.
Wow,
that's cool. You go through everything that you've, so you find the Stave Church, you find the real Akershus Castle, a bunch of other stuff that's kind of neat. Go through all the scenes from the movie.
You'd think if they'd have taken some of that money and just kind of invested it back, it would have been a smart play.
Well, the problem is that they can face it. It's government officials and the people get elected or forced out of office or that sort of thing. I will tell you that Disney, when it's met with other countries, Spain and the like, about coming into to World Showcase, they do in fact bring up the story about how what happened with Norway, the impact that having a pavilion at Epcot can have on your nation's tourism from the United States.
And, yeah. Sure.
So, but
for sure, man, I thought for sure Spain was going to be the next one.
They have the conversations, but
do you remember? Do you guys ever get to that the pavilion when Spain did food and wine one year? They did it was a huge walkthrough exhibit back by Germany, and it was so there was one. It was a walkthrough. It was the one of them was the how you make sherry, the alcoholic drink, and the other one was olive production. At the end of each, you got samples of either. But it was a huge pavilion, like the size of a house. I mean, this was not a little stand where they're, making sushi and turning around and giving it to you. This was a substantial walkthrough with a kitchen and I thought, well, this has got to be the test,
right?
Yeah.
For the pavilion, right? And they didn't pull the trigger on it, and I was like, I would have signed up for it right then and there. But
so often it comes down to it's not enough to have the government or government officials on board. You've got to have, corporate support within the country, somebody who's willing to pony up the fees. And I will tell you, on five different occasions, Disney had the support of the Russian government and had a Russian corporation willing to fund construction of that, the St. Basil's, that model, that photo we've all seen.
Sure.
And, Disney Legal would start to drill down into the company and, that agreed to sponsor it and eventually would come back and it's like, you're the Russian mob, aren't you? And
right,
like,
right. Yeah, Russian.
Right. Yeah, we are.
Define you caught us again. Mob.
And they just couldn't do it, kind of the same thing would happen with the Africa Pavilion. The only countries that were willing And again, we're talking 82 to late 80s till the fall of apartheid. But the only country that was willing to pony up the dough to build that pavilion was South Africa. And it was like, I don't think so. So.
Jim, next, I have two questions for you. One, going back to Hollywood Studios.
Mm-hmm.
What's it going to be called? What, in your opinion, what will it be called?
For a good year, it was supposed to be Disney Hollywood Adventure, and it's only in like the last 6 to 8 months there's been some pushback on that name. Evidently tested really well with the Craigslist crew that they brought in. But, you know, the belief now is with as much Pixar and Star Wars stuff that's coming in that, you know, maybe the name, really does have to sort of express, you know, what this park is really about, you know, that it's more about, you know, the fantasy of Hollywood. It's you know, whether it's science fiction or it's, you know, it's Pixar. And they did do a couple of Pixar-centric names that people really pushed back hard on. You know, that there was some talk of, you know, just literally just going with Pixar Place for the whole thing, because the argument was that, you know, Lucasfilm, when you really get down right down to it, Pixar is an outgrowth of Lucasfilm. That you know, George, this is the division that George sold to Steve because he needed the money to pay, you know, his ex-wife Marcia. And, you know, and it was just the notion of, do you really want to put that in the brochure? You know, it's like, welcome to the theme park that's part of the settlement. You know, it's like, you know. Now that we're definitely going into extra innings. I mean, you know, Iger did admit, you know, at the last annual meeting, to, by the way, Gideon Mosley, the son of Doobie and Rebecca Mosley, was the one who asked the question and nailed Iger. Wow. So it's like, yeah, you know, that's, keep an eye on that kid. He's going to do, you know, good things in theme parks. You know, and,
part
but
of
yeah,
him, maybe,
you know, but yeah, we are, you know, that there's still, you know, moving the, you know, the tiles around the Scrabble board right now, trying to figure out what iteration of Hollywood, Disney, and some third word, you know, they're going to use to describe this park.
I've heard how Disney Hollywood Adventure many times, and I thought that was really an odd choice, in my opinion, just because of California Adventure, and more importantly, because of Islands of Adventure. I thought they would kind of maybe steer away from that a little bit.
Well, you know, but the hard reality is that they need to, you know, you've got the Magic Kingdom, you've got Epcot, you've got Animal Kingdom. You need a strong name for this thing. You need something, and more to the point, you need that, you know, in much the same way that you don't call Rapunzel, you call it Tangled, or you don't call the Snow Queen, you call it Frozen. You know, that's, you want something that says to teenage males that, you know, there's exciting stuff in here.
Sure.
So, you know, adventure is one of those shorthanded words. You know, on the other hand, you know, you could just go an entirely different direction, and Disney's Hollywood Free Beer.
that gets me interested.
Me and Sam would never leave.
There you go. You know, just it's, but it's all about, you know, branding. And I know.
Yeah, you could simplify that too to Hollywood Adventure.
Yeah. You know, so we'll see
Hollywood
soon
Kingdom.
Enough.
I have one other thing real quick before we let you go. And we've gone, you guys have been more than patient with us and giving us a lot of your time. But I was listening to you guys show your last podcast episode on, and correct me if I'm wrong. Now it's touringplans.com Disney Dish with Jim Hill.
Yes. The most complicated name known to man, but
Disney's
Hollywood Adventure Free Beer, and hey, look, hookers.
So just Google Jim Hill and Lynn Testa, and you'll come up, or maybe hookers, and maybe you'll get them.
Yeah, no, you don't want to do
that. DisneyDish.bandcamp.com. There we go.
There we go. Also right there.
So I was listening to you guys last episode, and The last time I was in down in Walt Disney World was the last week of February, which I think you guys were there right after me.
Like the next week, yeah.
And caught you guys talking about that, the extra security passageways, the checkpoints at Magic Kingdom.
Yeah. Is the, we started the opening of our Magic Kingdom live show talking about this.
Yes. I thought those were – I saw that the last day we were there.
Yeah.
And thought it was very, very cool to have those rather than have to walk all the way around if you're coming from the buses.
Yeah, okay. If you're getting off the buses
or ferry,
or the ferry. You remember how you used to have to walk up and to the left and then back down a little pathway, then make a hard right to go into the security checkpoints on either side. And that's a hassle, right? Because the first thing is you're getting off the boat and you got to figure out where you're going, only to go into a secure line. Well, now they've done this, and it's only temporary, right, Jim? It's only for the first few hours of the day.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I actually, after we recorded the show, and I actually went out, and they were breaking it up for the end of the day, and was talking with the folks about it. And I know there's a lot of Disney theme park fans who aren't necessarily fans of Fast Plus and the Magic Bands, and all that, but the guy in security actually admitted to me, said, look, we don't do this every day. We do it the days that we know that we have a certain number of people coming to the Magic Kingdom in the morning, and that feeds directly off of the Magic Bands.
Sure.
That they know that, so many people have stuff booked for, 8, 9, 10 o'clock. And so we decided to create this point here that would allow, and it's strictly for people who are getting off of, as Len mentioned, the ferry and the buses. But it's a blow off point that, again, is only when they can look at the spreadsheet to the day and say, okay, we have an extra 10 or 15,000 people coming in, and so many of them have booked meals or have attractions booked. That in the first 3 or 4 hours of the day, we need to set up our, this security point. So, that's honestly one of the benefits of the My Disney Experience thing is that, on a specific day-to-day basis, they are, they can now staff the parks differently to deal with the, whatever group of people coming in that day.
Yeah.
And you're just going to see this get further finessed and refined going forward, whether it's, knowing, for example, that how many people are going to be in the corrals to watch the nighttime, whether it's the fireworks or the parades. And it's like, so does that mean how many more ice cream carts or souvenir people do you send over to that side of the park to deal with them?
Sure.
We're going to see how we experience the Disney parks changed in lots of fundamentally different ways in the next 5 years or so. And I know a lot of people will mourn the more spontaneous Disney vacations that they had in the past, but I don't see that coming back. So
well,
there's a nice hopeful note to end the show on.
Thank you so much.
And then the dinosaurs died.
Right.
It's very sad.
But there's lots of good stuff too, and we'll talk about all that at some point.
Yep.
Okay, cool.
You guys rock. Thank you.
Yeah, you
can't
guys
wait
are
for
awesome.
The new stuff.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate your time. If you want to give anybody a shout out or let them know how they can reach you guys.
How do we get in touch with you guys?
I'm Len Testa, at Len Testa on Twitter, and Len at touringplans.com.
Guy posts stories at Jim Hill Media. Guy puts stuff up on HuffPo. Len and I, of course, do the Unofficial Guide Disney Dish podcast. We've begun also putting shows up on Bandcamp.
DisneyDish.bandcamp.com.
Yeah. And I don't know. It's your local street corner.
Jim, that said, I will see you at the Dayton Disneyland Festival here in June.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. That's a great event, by the way. It's weird. You would not think in the center of the country, in Ohio, that you could have, so far away from the parks, but there's such a nice bunch of people who are so enthusiastic about the parks, In fact, it's doing so well this year. They're bumping it out from 2 days to 3 days, and that reminds me, I really do have to get writing my presentations for that. Great. Come by, say hello.
Absolutely.
Thank you, guys. Thank you so much. It's been a great time. Hopefully, we can have you guys back on one day in the future when we get some more Disney news, which happens almost every day, it seems like.
That'll be about 5 minutes from now.
Right, exactly. So, well, enough to cover a show. So thank you so much. You guys are a wealth of information, and it's been a lot of fun. So we truly appreciate it.
Thanks for inviting us on.
That was a great interview. Thanks, guys. We really got a lot of good information out of that one. And you know what, Mr. Hill? You are indeed no sidekick to anybody. Well, that's it for show number 79. Thanks for listening.
If you would like to join our jamboree, there's a simple rule that's compulsory. Mortals pay a token fee. Rest in peace, the haunting's free. So hurry back.